Carrying on from that other tape, Judy, when I told Elder Brown to not to chip in on me and to embarrass me again, he said, "I'm the senior elder and I'll do this any way I want to do it." And at that, I said, "Now look, the very next time you embarrass me again, split up my conversations, take over and do this and embarrass me. I will take you outside of town and beat the tar out of you, and I'll bring you back in and bandage you up. But I won't go through this again. All these months I've labored with you and I've put up with all your nonsense, but I can't take any more of you of that." And he just boldly said, "I'm the senior elder and I'll do anything I want, and you can't whip me." Dad, I took off my glasses and took off my coat and took off my tie and rolled up my sleeves and reached over and took a hold of him. And I was ready to smack him. And he backed off. And he said, "I'll report you to the mission president." And I said, "Conference is coming up in about a month. And I wished you would. You don't dare. You don't dare tell President Whitaker." Well, I was always glad I didn't hit him. But I was ready to. And, now I ought to enter a little bit here on the bright side. The first 3 months I was with him, we carried a recorder and a record player and a bunch of records called us the Fullness of Times. And we never taught a lesson. We always played that. I told him I didn't know whether we was Jehovah Witnesses or what we were. But anyway, I went along with it. And those Fullness of Time records were, I learned an awful lot off those records. They were published in the latter part of the 1930s and told the story of the restoration of the gospel and all about it. And they were real good. But anyway, things deteriorated between he and I to where we didn't do much. And I was glad when the conference come and conference come and went, and I didn't say anything about it. I wouldn't have squawked. I knew he had, this was July, and he wasn't going home till next January, February, I didn't think. But at least that's when his time was up. He'd been out about a year longer than I had. And good night. He didn't know enough to even give a decent report home. And it was kind of sad, but I got more work out of him and anybody else ever got. But I wasn't doing any good there. So a day or two after conference, I thought, well, I'm stuck here for another 3 months. I better start figuring out what to do. And I was sitting there one morning and I was trying to calm things down a little bit. In walked the district president, George Badwin, and his companion, and he said, "Elder Brown, take my companion and go out on your regular tracking area, and I'll take Elder Rollins, and I'm going, we'll go track somewhere else." And so, we all lit out. I said to Badwin, "Where are you going?" He said, "As soon as those guys are outside, we're going back to that apartment. I need to talk to you." He said, when we got back to the apartment, why, Badwin said to me, he said, "What's really going on here?" I said, well, it's a kind of sad. I said, I regret what's happened. So I told him the story of what had happened and how it had come about gradually and carefully. I said, I regret that. But I said, have you ever went tracking with him? And he said, no. And I said, you ought to try that. No, he said, I'll take your word for it. He said, I haven't slept about you. I've worried about you now for 2 weeks. But he said, when we got to conference and I met in the special meeting between me and President Whitaker, he said, President Badawin, I just don't understand what real sin Elder Rawlins has committed. But 6 months with Elder Brown ought to cover any sin a man would commit. Nobody else ever stayed with him that long, and he hasn't complained. Haven't you got a conscience? Can't you move him? He's entitled to something else. And he said, well, President Whitaker, he's the only boy that's the only missionary that's ever got any work out of Brown. I said, well, I know that. But then I can't help that. I can't sacrifice Elder Rawlins completely, all his mission. We can't do that. He said, you ought to figure out something. I'd had a siege of colitis about the 1st of July. I vomited till I vomited blood. I guess that's when my ulcer started. And I wasn't very well. Now, the last 6 months, my health-wise, the last 6 months before I went on a mission, I hadn't had any gallstone trouble. I hadn't had any gallstone trouble for 6 months of my mission, and I felt pretty good. But here's where it started, my health started going down. So they put me in the country, and I survived pretty good in the country in an automobile. So Badawin left his companion with Brown, and I went with him to tour the district. Gosh, we'd preach every night. And all that studying I'd done in Montgomery and in Greenville was starting to pay off. Now was the time to preach, and now I had enough experience and enough studying done that I could preach. And I was with Elder Badawin about a month, I believe. And then they split Elder Hull and Elder Christofferson up. And I went in an old 1930 Dodge with Claire Hull, I think in August, sometime in August. And we had a quarter of the fourth of the state of Alabama, the southwest quarter of Alabama, to cover. This was the joy of my mission, I believe. This is 6 months. Elder Hull and I had a good reputation among missionaries. We were both country kids, and we worked hard. And we preached. Here's where I learned to preach. Gosh, we were called in to administer to the sick. We were called for this. And every night, we averaged cottage meeting every night. When we'd come to branches for the weekend or somewhere for the weekend, the branch presidents always want us to preach. And so here's where we learned to preach. And I got pretty fiery. Now, I'm not bragging. I'm just telling fact. Now, I could get on a street corner, and I could hold an audience. And that's the only place on earth that I know of. If you get to preach and they don't like what you say and they just walk off and leave you. And if you ever had that happen, the next time you get up to preach, you'll do a better job of it. Now, Elder Hull and I had some real fine experiences together. We went to a little town one Saturday afternoon to hold a street meeting. We generally held one every Saturday afternoon. That was the standard rule in Alabama. Country people all come to town on Saturday and they like to preach. They like preaching. And then we took a man with us, a member of the church there. I forgot his name now. He'd been in the church a year or such matter. He hadn't been to one of the our street meetings and he wanted to go, so we took him with us. Three of the preachers ganged up on us. A couple of hayseeds, they thought. Elder Hull was conducting this meeting. He was pretty good on scriptures, but that was the best day he ever had. And we both preached. And this member of the church there was with us, he preached. And then we opened it up for discussion. Cops had been real fine, and we blocked the road. We estimated, I think, 200, somewhere between 200 and 300 people there. The meeting started about 1 o'clock. We never got through to 5. I discovered a good-sized man in a pair of striped overalls leaning against the telephone pole. And if he agreed what was said was right, everybody agreed with him. And in case he didn't understand the scriptures, I walked over by him with my Bible. Elder Hull stood there without anything in his hands. He quoted scripture and he quoted where it was. He told where it was. And I stood over by this man and I let him read the scriptures that Hull was quoting to make sure that Hull quoted it right in the proper order. During all that discussion, I got in on some of the discussion, and so did this local man. This local man, he was standing around, this member of the church, standing around there stomping one foot to the other. He had to say something, he didn't look saved. He wanted to get in on it. He was all wound up. So he asked these preachers, do you take up a collection in your church? And one preacher said, I sure do. And he said, aren't you afraid to? He said, don't you know what the Savior did to the money changers in the temple? And no, he said, what the Savior did to the money changers? The preacher said, yeah, but that was in the house of the Lord. And this guy said, well, where in the world do you preach? And that whole audience just roared. And there was a little nonsense going on there. And finally, once this preacher said, now the Bible said, and this man in the striped overall said, hey, preacher, these boys are quoting where they say. Now, you either quote where it says or shut up. The preacher said, well, I don't remember for sure where it is. And he said, all right, then don't say it. And I've often wondered where that man came from, because all at once I discovered him there. When the meeting was over, he was gone. I never thought any about it till a few years ago, and I wondered if that was one of the three Nephites or somebody, but he was sure a welcomed man at that meeting. We were in a county that missionaries hadn't done much in there. There's a couple of missionaries been tarred and feathered about the turn of the century, and we were the first ones back in there to do much. That county hadn't had the gospel for many years. So one time we went to Brother Roberts's place over there on the west side of Alabama, Butler County. And he said, elders, would you stay with us? And I said, gosh, we'd sure be glad to. Claire was the senior, but he never exercised any great control. We just worked together. I never spent much time in my mission as a senior companion. I was always on some kind of an assignment, except with Hull. And we just got along fine. And, by golly, he said, there's a man down the road here that's preaching in church. And he said, I think he was baptized as a boy, but I can't prove that. He says, his wife's a member and his mother-in-law's a member. I said, would you go to, and he's turned out to be a Pentecostal preacher, preaching again in the church, and I don't like it. Would you elders go with me and we'd go down there tonight? Let's see. And Hull looked at me and he said, what do you think? And I said, well, I think maybe we ought to talk to Sister Roberts and bypass supper. I wouldn't mind facing the devil, but I've got to be ready. So we didn't have supper that night. We went fasting. And they held that meeting in a big old building. I imagine somewhere around 100 people there, guessing. The building was chock full. They stomped their old feet and they sang those old sad songs and they bawled. Then they got down to pray and everybody but those two elders and the family came with us, Brother and Sister Roberts. I believe their girl came with us. We didn't get out to pray with them. And they prayed and they prayed and they prayed and they went on and on. They talked to the Lord, they used the name of the Lord, they sounded like somebody did their figure the hammer. Never anything so disgusting in all my life. And they finally quit. Got up and the preacher said, you know, it's been a long time since I heard two Mormon elders preach. We've got two with us here tonight. And I've met this boy somewhere before. Turned to me. And I don't know when, or where, or how, or why. But he'd never met me before in his life. And I don't know who he had me confused with, but anyway. And he said, well, we'll turn it over, the preaching order, to these two Mormon elders. And one of them can be first and one of them be second. It don't matter. They can have a choice. Well, Elder Hull looked at me. Got up first. And he'd get going. And they'd say, amen, brother. That's the one. And that'd befuddle him so. That confused him. He wasn't used to that. And he'd shift feet, change subjects. He crucified every talk. Now, if he reads this book, he might choke me, but then he talked on every subject that he'd ever talked on, and everyone he'd ever heard me talk on. Now, thank goodness I had a talk about prepared that he'd never heard. And so I could see what he was doing. So I reached down in my pocket, brought out a talk that I got had all laid out in form. He'd never heard me give. I was glad I had them. The amens didn't bother me. His preacher afterwards invited us to stay at his home one night, and so the next night we stayed there. Now, there's an interesting story about this county that I'll have to come back to. Elder Hull and I went on down the state. Gosh, we roamed down that country. I know a couple of lady missionaries, Afton Hyatt and Bernice Clifton. Bernice Clifton from over in Savannah, Georgia. Afton Hyatt from Payson. It was her younger sister that Peck ended up marrying. They wanted to go to a street meeting. And those two gals were real beautiful singers. Now, Peck and I didn't sing very good. We sang a little loud, but not very good. In fact, it was he and I was together one day on the street meeting when somebody come along and dropped two bits in one of our hats. It was laying there on the curb. And what music was died at that point. And I believe we were overpaid, but this is where, with Claire and I, this is where I learned I got to enjoy my mission. Oh, to preach and to be able to hold an audience. I got to where I thoroughly enjoyed it. I never got up to do that without some fear and trembling, but I got to where I could hold an audience. And we preached every day pretty near of the month. Win, lose, or draw, we stayed with it. We went down to the country town to the west of Mobile. Was holding a cottage meeting there one night. And I was telling those holy roller people, they were all Pentecostals, of how the Holy Ghost worked. And that the way they was doing it was wrong. And I was right after, and they was listening. And a dang dog laying out there outside the door took a fit. They didn't vaccinate dogs in those days. They'd get a fit and come out of it to shoot them. And went through that house at Kaiyai, and I got the door shut and left him outside. When I came back to go back to preaching, there was my audience standing on their chairs, standing on the table, standing on the sofa, just waving their hands and shouting hallelujah right to me. And I turned the meeting back to Elder Hull, and he dismissed the meeting and we quit. Now, there was just no way. We'd lost all we had. Never did really forget that one. But along that winter, President Badowin said to me, Butler County, Alabama, used to be all Mormon. And he said, I'm going to split you and Hull up. You've enjoyed one another long enough. And he said, Elder Wigil, Rawlings has been out the longer than you have. And he's always been seen junior. Of course, I'd always been junior. And the elders he'd had had dominated him. And of course, he was a good boy, but he hadn't been to school very far. He couldn't read very good. And he never got the gospel straight. He'd get up to preach and he'd get it all tangled up. And when he got through, neither him nor the audience nor the Lord nor anybody else knew what he'd said. And he said, I'd like you to go junior under Wigil and go over to Butler County on foot and proceed there and see what you can do with him. And old Hull tore into Badowin till Badowin cried. He said, all the things you've put Rawlings through, you at least ought to make him senior over Wigil. He can do more with Wigil as a senior. Badowin came back to me with tears in his eyes. He said, it took all I had to ask you to do this. And Elder Hull tore right into me. And I said, President Badowin, these last 6 months have been a joy and a satisfaction to me. My health is fair. I can give you a pretty good day's work. I've been having some trouble with my mixture of gallstones and ulcers. And I said, I'll go. Don't worry about it. I'll try and keep Woodsell out of as much trouble as I can, and I'll do what I can for him. So Weaver, Hull took us over there and dumped us off. I can't remember the lady's name up to the north end of the county. It was the Croker family there. Oh dear, if I could just remember this one lady's name. We had part of our stuff there and part of our stuff down the other end of the county to Brother Roberts's. Badwin was getting about ready to go home. That was about his last assignment. I think that's the last I saw him. He was replaced soon afterwards and headed home to Berkeley, California. But anyway, there was a story in that county. Yeah, let's tell it this other way. We started down through that county, and I said to Elder Widgel, I used to preach old Widgel every night somewhere. That's where I learned to be a diplomat a little bit, to get past him. We'd go up on a door to track. I was tired. I didn't feel too good. I'd go back over and sit down when it was his door to take and sit down on the porch and let him track. And he'd say, I know all those people would tear him apart. He'd land, he'd been out better than a year, 15 months, I guess. And it'd tear him apart. And I'd just sit there and let him go. And I'd take a door, and I finally caught on to what he was doing. And I said, hey, when I take a door, keep your mouth shut. Will you? He said, yeah. And he talked to me, and he said, why don't you help me? And I said, what do you mean, help you? This is treatment you should have had in the first months of your mission. You'll never learn that any other way. When we get away from the house, if there's any question in your mind, I'll answer anything you got. But there's no way you can learn that any other way. I don't believe I could have learned it any other way. I had to learn it that way. Everybody has to do that. And every night when I'd go to bed, I'd go to sleep with him, bawling me out about my preaching. Gosh, that went on for a week or 2 weeks, seemed like a month. I never said anything. Finally, one day he said, I guess I better quit bawling you out about your preaching. And I said, now that you've brought the subject up, why have you? I said, you stand up there to preach and you teeter back and forth and you wind that arm around and you never say very much. You don't hold your audience. You don't get the gospel out in a true form. I hold that audience. I match my preaching with anybody in the district. Why have you bawled me out every night? And he said, I thought that was the job of a senior elder. And I guess in that 15 months of his mission, he'd never gone to bed, but what one of those senior elders he had would bawl him out about what he would do. And I said, oh dear, is that what they've done to you? And he said, yes. And I said, all right, call it off. We don't work that way. I said, that's not the way Hull and I have worked together. And he said, I kind of envied the way you and Hull worked together. So one time we were up to the north end of the county and started down through, and we got into Butler, and then we got on the train. I was tired of walking. Went to a little logging town that was set out there in the woods. And got off the train there and We met a young man, I imagine somewhat our age, on the street, and introduced ourselves to him and said we'd like to find the custodian of the... As we said to this young man, we'd like to find the custodian of the schoolhouse we'd like to preach in. And he said, well, I'm sure you can get it. My father's in charge. I said, we'd like to talk to your father. He said, I'd be pleased to let you know, let you meet him. Come with me. And so we followed him down the street. And he turned into a place and through a picket gate. And his dad was talking there to someone. And that's the only other person I knew. I didn't know. And I can't remember much about this other individual. But he said, Dad, these are a couple of Mormon elders. And the old man turned and said, what do you want? And I said, we'd like to make arrangements with you. Use your schoolhouse to preach in it tonight. And he said, you leave town. And he flew into a rage and about Joe Smith and about us Mormons. Now I said, you get out of town. I said, well, we've come a long ways. Tell you the story if you don't want to hear it, why we won't stay. And he said, that's right, you won't stay, now you leave. And I said, well, if we're not welcome here, that's what we do. And this boy looked real dumbfounded. So we started on down the road. I remember there was a little stream of water run down that dirt road. As I crossed that road, they didn't have a culvert, they just drove through it. Big old logging trucks, they'd go most anywhere. As I jumped that ditch, I said to Elder Widgel, I hope the Lord don't hold that again, that man. Because he don't really know what he's doing. Well, we went on down the road and stopped to a man's place. Guys, there was a big fine home on the west side of the road. Walked up and knocked on the door, and fine middle-aged lady came to the door, and I told her who we were, and she said, gosh, I'm a Mormon. And I said, oh, my land, I didn't know we had any here. And she said, yes, most of these people are Mormons. We haven't seen missionaries in 30 years. So the last missionary that was through here was Elder Joe Biggs, Franklin, Idaho. And I said, I've met Joe Biggs. He lived just across the valley from me. And she said, you boys look a little tired. You had your dinner? And I said, no, you could use a drink of water. She said, I'll give you a drink of water and sit right there on that big old swing, and it's in the shade and it's cool. I'll go out in the field and talk to my husband. Don't leave while I'm gone. So she went out and talked to her husband a few minutes. Her and her husband came in. Her husband shook my hand and he said, I haven't seen missionaries in 30 years. He said, my wife's a member of the church, I'm not. But we'd be pleased to have you stay here and preach to us. Said, my wife will fix you some dinner. Said, what time would you like to hold preaching tonight? And I said, what's the best hour? And he suggested the time. I said, well, we could scout around and track the neighborhood. And he said, no, we have a grapevine that runs through these woods and beats Western Union. I'll pass the word. You boys have a nap this afternoon. We'll fill up the yard with people to preach to. And we'd like you to stay with us tonight. Well, none of that. That was nice of him, and we accepted. And that's just what we did. We rested that afternoon, and at night we went to preaching. Well, I had Melba Clayson, Keith Clayson's sister, had sent me her picture. I wrote to her while I was on the mission. I'd cut the side, cut that picture down, put it in my wallet. In most of those places you would preach, they would put you in front of the fireplace. And gosh, the young girls would flock around you just like something else. You couldn't get out. Of course, it was against their law to ever marry someone who had been married. So I'd open up my wallet and introduce them to my wife. And they'd back off of me just like I was poison, because about half the missionaries were out when I was were married anyway. They didn't know the difference. And then I could go right on through the house and outside to those old boys. I was out there whittling and spitting. They were the ones that invited you to stay. And this was quite a standard procedure of mine. Wigil thought that was terrible. But anyway, let's go back to this other story. So after preaching, I got out and we filled up the house and filled up the yard and everything else. And I preached loud enough so they could hear me. Didn't have any microphone, but they could hear. Because I'd come a long ways and I wanted them to hear. And people said, come stay with us. And as you're coming on down, why come stay with us? And anyway, that was a real nice evening. The next morning, we'd just gotten to bed, get landed at midnight before we got to bed, and got all the questions answered and all the things done. And about 3 o'clock, I heard the old man up. And so I got up, dressed, and went out and sat on the porch with him in the dark, waiting for daylight. Just the crack of daylight, he hook up that old mule and go out to plow his corn or cotton, whatever. And he sat there and he told me that he was a member of the Ku Klux Klan. Told me a little bit about it. He said, you know, gosh, we're in a minority here. He said, that's how we control people, the Negro vote, the Negro people. So they stay in order, we don't have any trouble. But anyway, we went on down the road. On down the road, there were some people that weren't members of the church. They were friends of ours. We used to stop there and preach every time going through. We stopped there. And this lady said, where did you stay last night? And I told her, why? Did you stop in that little logging town and gave its name? And I said, yes. Said, now wait a minute, what's going on? Because as I said, as I walked down the road, as we walked down the road that next day, the trucks or cars or anything that passed it stopped. Say, elders, would you like a ride? Would you like a ride, elders? And they said, yeah, we're just tracking down this street. Well, about a mile to the next house, we'll take you to it. That's the kind of treatment we got all day. This is a little unusual. And I said, what are you driving at? What has happened? Said, did you put the curse on that town as you were driven out of? I said, no. He didn't. You didn't shake the dust of your shoes off again. I said, no. I said, what are you talking about? She said, who ordered you out of that town? I said, the man that said he was the sheriff. She said, all right. She told me his name. She said he got on a drunk last night with his friend, which was quite usual for most nights. And his friend, and they got in an argument, his friend hit him on the head with the butt end of a shotgun and killed him. And that whole town, and this whole county, a word is passed that he drove you out and you shook the dust of your shoes off again. And I said, he told us to leave. We didn't do the other part. Now, the thing they were scared of was a little bit south of there was a town by the, as I remember, by the name of St. Stephensville. St. Stephensville. And they had a little logging community. They had a lot of timber there. And he went out and back about the turn of the century, two Mormon elders were there preaching, and they caught those boys and tied them to a pole. They'd tie their hands together and their feet together and run a pole between and carried them outside of town and laid them out there in the sunshine, in the heat, to die. And those kids worked and struggled and finally got untied. And I don't know how many hours it took. When they got untied, they shook the dust of the shoes off again that town, and bats inhabited that place. When I was there, Peck went down and seen that town, I believe, but I never did get there. And they was afraid that's what we had done there, but we didn't do that. And I realized. And so as I walked up and down through that county, this was the reception that I got. Everybody said, come in, Elder. We're glad to have you. During this place is where my health deteriorated to the point that I know Ray Wright was the new mission president from Lyman, Wyoming, and he was 20 years older than we were. He had kids same age we did. He was down there. His wife had died, and he'd come on a mission. Anyway, he had a siege of boils. I used to call him Job. Mission president sent him word for him and I to come in to the office, and so we went in. And I spent the next couple of months in Atlanta under pretty good doctor's care. Got feeling pretty good, loafed around that office, didn't do much. Finally got to feel a little better. And then they sent me to Central Florida, down in Orlando was headquarters. They had a lady up in Ocala, don't remember her name. Yeah, I do, but I'm not going to tell her. But anyway, she had about six kids. Her husband worked on construction where he could find work, and he wasn't home very often. She fell in love with every elder that had come along. And mission president told his son, who was the district president, to send me over there. She wouldn't fall in love with me. She didn't. And I worked in Ocala. Worked there with an Elder Eccles. That's really the only time I was ever a senior companion, Elder Eccles. Good land. I kind of come along. I was branch president in Ocala, and he was my first counselor. We had three or four brethren around there that I thought they might well do that job. I'd sooner preach the gospel than worry about all those problems. So I got them to set it up as a branch. And Elder Eccles used to take about 2 hours every morning to write that girl a letter. And I used to just pace the floor like a wild Indian. My land, I was just wild. So I said to him, where have you worked? And he said, I've always been right here. I haven't been out very long. I said, you've never been on a country trip, have you? It wasn't uncommon for me to take few tracks, a little suitcase, a few clothes. Just head right down the road, find a place to preach, a place to stay. And next morning, just do the same thing. And it wasn't uncommon for me. I was used to that kind of missionary work. And Eccles, I said to him, "You've never been on a country trip, have you?" And he said, "Oh, I'd like to." District co-president was Elder Morris Buticoford at that time from Idaho Falls, I believe. He came to see us. I said, "This elder has never been on a trip, country trip. He don't even know what it is. Now, how about just taking a loop out through this country and leave Monday morning?" The branch president lived out about 30 miles. I said, "Why don't we go out to his place? We make a loop out through here. We'll be back Saturday." "Yeah," he said, "I believe that'd be just the thing to do." Oh, that we took that trip. I preached at Eccles every night and walked him all day. And about Thursday, we was walking down that dusty road, and he threw down his suitcase and he grabbed me. He was a lot bigger than I was. Began to shake me, and I, "What's the matter with you?" And he said, "I haven't written to that girl all week. I haven't even thought of her." I mean, she's not going to wait for you anyway. But after a few months in Ocala, they switched us to Inverness, and we tracked that out, lived in Inverness. They sent an elder, Neely from Salt Lake, Raymond Neely, in to take my place with Eccles. And I went down to St. Petersburg with Elder Theron Hall, boy from Eager, Arizona. I'd known him up in Alabama. Because I just couldn't hardly go. I spent a couple of months in August and September. Latter part of September, mission president called me into Atlanta. I just couldn't go. He said, "Elder Rollins, I'm ready to offer you an honorable release." He said, "You've done me all you can. You've given me everything you had. And I'd let you go home if you accept it." I said, "I hate to go home." 4 months short, and he said, "Yeah, but if you stick it out full time, you might have to send you home in the box. You give us all you got now." I said, "An honorable release, I'll take." Came home. Got home. Oh, about the 1st of October, I believe. 1942. War was on. Every time you was heckled, everything about being draft dodger. Gosh, you called all kinds of words. But that kind of sums up my mission. And I came home and reported my mission. They put me in as explorer leader. That winter I didn't do much. We got the beets off and crops off. And I was just about a year getting back to where I could do much. I give it all I had. Well, let's see what this sounds like. Judy, I about talked out, but that Ray Wright back there a ways was not the mission president. He was the new district president. I guess we shut off here. I've about talked out today. Jude, here I ought to enter. As I got home from my mission, I reported to the draft board and was summoned to physical. I couldn't pass the physical. That was in the fall of 1942. And every year they kept calling me back. And I couldn't make it. Now it's kind of tough to be left behind. I was foreman, and trying to get going. And, but anyway, I believe it was August of 1945. The war was over in Europe. A lot of the boys were coming home. And they summons me for another physical. And that one I passed. I'll never forget the old doctor down at Fort Douglas. He said, "You've dodged this draft all these years." And I said, "Oh, give me all that nonsense. I've never asked for deferment. I've never asked for anything." No. Well, he said, "We're going to draft you." And I said, "Well, go ahead. I don't really care." And he lit into me. His superior came to him and said, "Shut up. That boy's our guest. Now cut it out." He calmed down. And that was the weekend that they dropped the first bomb on, atomic bomb on Japan. Well, then the Emperor of Japan decided that was all he wanted, and so he called it. The war was over. I was 25 years old. And so I never went into service. I had the testimony of Dr. Cragen, that he said, "It's good you didn't go. I don't think you can take it." And he said, "Believe the Lord's got something else for you to do." Anyway, that was the reason I never went to service. Now there's a few other things I ought to mention. I was thinking today that I ought to put a thing in here about Clayton Hogan. He had he taught me quite a bit. I always liked Clayton. He was my cousin. He was Uncle Gowdy's boy, and Mint was Dad's sister. He was quite some years older than I was. He was about the age of Owen or Ariel. I'm not sure which, but anyway. There's a lot of things he did I didn't like. He was never active in church. He went to church very often. He was always involved in a lot of other nonsense. But I didn't like some things he did, but I liked Clayton Hogan. When I was about 11 or 12 years old, he rode in the yard one day on his saddle horse. He said, "Uncle Alf," that was my father, "you got more boys than I got. You don't need all of them. Why don't you let me have that youngest one?" And, so I worked for Clayton all summer long. If you wanted to get time off to go on a scout trip, why, you could go. And you could tell him what you wanted to do, and he'd arrange it so that you'd get there too off to go. And along with that, and carrying newspapers and all, why, I had money to do what I needed to do. Clayton was a horse trader, a cow trader. He was a trader. He knew animals. Come along in this depression, things were real down. I remember one time Dad needed to sell a cow. He had to have some money. He called up Clayton and he said, "Clayton, stop in." And Clayton came in and he said, "I need some money, Clayton. I thought probably this animal I'd sell." Clayton walked out and looked at it and he said, "Well, Uncle, I could give you so much money. Or if you want to get her to the scales, I'll give you so much pound. It's just strictly up to you. You can go where if you want. And whichever's the most, you can take." And I worked for Clayton most summers and then on. And Jimmy pitched his hay. And I got quite well acquainted with him. And I think it was the year 1940. Reed and I and Alan Haslam pitched his hay for him. And I think it was the first crop of hay, and it was long in tail end of June. We was getting about done. And Clay had quite a vocabulary. He'd always told me that on one deal he was with, Fred Taggart beat him. And I thought that was quite an accomplishment for Fred Taggart to beat him. He'd beat a lot of people, but for Fred to beat him on a deal, it was all right with me. It wasn't all right with him. He wasn't used to that. He generally come out on the best end of deals, and he was quite a treasure. Well, we get up early one morning, the last day of hay, and started a couple, 3 hours early. And we were hired by the day, I believe, or by the hour, but anyway. So many hours a day was the standard day, and we get so much pay for it. We got through about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and that was a full day's work, because we'd started early, and we want something else to do that evening anyway. Reed and Al and I was walking up the road, carrying a pitchfork. Clay coming from town, stopped and said, "How come you're leaving?" And I said, "We're all through." "Well," he said, "that's good. Let's see. How many days did you work?" And I told him. I had counted that day as a full day. I didn't know whether he knew. I don't remember whether he knew that we started early that morning or not. And he said, "Let's see. This isn't a full day." And I looked at him and I said, "Don't you fret Taggart me." And he flew into a rage and he ran it and he raved and he carried on. Use some of those words you don't put on tape. And 5 minutes seemed like. Alton, he wasn't used to that kind of language and that kind of carrying on, and he backed off. He thought we was all going to get whipped. And finally, Clay quit and wrote out a check to each one of us full day. Al never did get over that. He just couldn't believe that. And I said, "Well, Al, don't worry about it. I've worked for him since I was 11 or 12 years old. I knew what I was doing." But after my mission, Clayton and I was in the presence of this ditch, Hogan Ditch. There was no dirt ditch, and it was a hard ditch to get water down it. I remember Clay, it was his irrigating turn, and I don't know, I was a hand or something. He'd come along, and it was his irrigating, and he said, "I've lost my water." And I said, "Well, go up the ditch and see what you can find." Well, he got up George Pond's field. George had his hay bunched, and a gust of wind had come along, bad wind, whipped through there quick, put a couple of bunches of hay in the ditch and dammed the ditch off, run the water all over George. George was mad at Clay for running the water all over him. Clay was mad at George because he'd stole his water. Well, first one come to me, and then the other. And I knew both of them pretty well. Clay said, "I'm going to whip George Pond, steal my water." Yeah, George come along and he said, "I'm going to whip Clay Hogan, run that water all over my field." And I said, "Well, now if you two boys will fight, I'll go watch it. But if all you can do is just cuss one another, why don't you go up and pull that hay out of the ditch and let the water go on its way and calm down and behave yourself." Yeah, finally calmed down. But that was kind of a normal thing for the ditch. I've been glad that in years to come we've been able to cement that ditch. Instead of taking 18 hours to run the water down that ditch, we can do it in about 2 hours. And it doesn't sub all over the country, and you kind of get the water where you want it, where you need it. That's been a lifetime job on that ditch. And handling water. Everybody wants all the water whenever they want it. Not many people can be a man when it comes to dealing in water. And I spent many years in this business. Run that ditch in prison of it now. Guess I'll be there for a year or so. We got some troubles we got to get straightened out. Some people you put in, they won't do it. And some will. So I thought I'd mention here. But now,